Welcome to the GP Pharmacy Club Pod, episode 10. This week we're looking at the post that we published on our website from the 26th of May to the 1st of June. We've been quite busy over the past week, and so we've got quite a lot to cover. There are 5 posts to discuss this week, and so we'll just have a quick run through the posts in case you've not had a chance to read through them all. The first one that you look at is some information from NHS England about a community pharmacy primary care network engagement role. This one is mainly directed at our community pharmacy colleagues. NHS England has published details about some funding that it has made available to enable community pharmacy to engage with GP primary care. The lead role is meant to support the regional implementation of the primary care access recovery plan. It covers the pharmacy first service, the blood pressure check service, and the pharmacy contraception service. The idea behind this is for somebody to spend time, at least 8 hours per quarter, engaging in local clinical meetings, which may be facilitated by local pharmacists or pharmacy technicians if required. There is funding available for this, and it has been allocated at £1,040 per PCN per annum. And the details that are indicated in the annex, and there's some reporting that the ICBs will need to engage in, as well as PCNs. Now, we put a comment saying that it's a very good idea, because sometimes community pharmacy feels like it's the unloved child of primary care, and we need a mechanism to integrate community pharmacy more closely into primary care. But we were just a bit puzzled about the actual level of the funding that's been made available. Firstly, it's been confirmed for only 1 year, which ends in 2025. So that's the current financial year. And secondly, the funding works out to roughly about £32.50 per hour, which might not be sufficient for whoever is undertaking the role to actually leave the pharmacy, pay local pharmacy costs, as well as agency fees in order to engage in the role. So there might be a bit of a challenge when it comes to that. If you work in community pharmacy, let us know what you think about this role. Is this something that you'd be interested in? Is the funding adequate for what the role entails, or what future do you see for the role? That's the first of our articles this week. The second article that we look at is one that we had promised some time back. It's a role comparison of pharmacists and pharmacy technicians in care homes. If you've been following us for a while, you'll be aware that we published a comparison of pharmacists and pharmacy technicians in general practice, in the general practice setting, a couple of months ago. And so this time we have taken the same approach and looked at the PCPAP learning analysis tool documents. What we've done is that we've pulled them together so that you can have a raw comparison side by side. As for the previous comparison, we have assumed that the pharmacist should be able to do all the stuff that the pharm tech would do. But then the pharmacist at the entry level would be able to do a few more things, mainly due to the difference in the nature of the training. The same would apply for the intermediate level as well as the advanced level. Some people find this useful as conversation starters with their superiors or with practice managers when they need to explain what they're able to do. Check it out and let us know if you similarly find this useful. We then move on to an opinion piece that we publish on behalf of one of our subscribers. This one is an interesting one because the subscriber has decided to look at the current framework around the prescribing rights of pharmacists and the pharmacist-run clinics in comparison with those run by other medical professionals. He suggests that there is a pharmacist prescribing loophole, in the sense that pharmacists are not directly regulated by CQC. They are regulated by the GPHC, as we know. But what seems to happen is that when they run clinics, those clinics may not fall under the remit of the CQC because they are pharmacies. And at the same time, if they are not registered as pharmacies, then the GPHC might not directly regulate them, which creates a bit of a loophole. We are all aware and have friends or might be actually practicing as professionals ourselves in beauty clinics, in Botox. And if we have not registered those with the GPHC, then we could be in that gray area. So he looks at the origins of this and the implications for that. He outlines the benefits of having pharmacists as prescribers, but also highlights some challenges if they operate outside of regulation. So we found it to be an interesting piece, and I think if you take time to read it as well, you will form an opinion either way, whether in favor or against the opinions expressed by our guest writer this week. For our fourth article, we look at an update that we got from the MHRA that looked at severe side effects that have been experienced with topical steroids. And the background to this is that people use these topical steroids for a variety of causes. It might be eczema, it might be exacerbations of psoriasis, and they use them for longer than we would anticipate. So there are new labeling requirements that are coming into place, that are coming into force, that will mean that manufacturers will label the boxes as mildly potent, as we know, such as hydrocortisone, moderately potent, or very potent. And there's an emphasis on using topical steroids for the shortest effective period possible. And also, I suppose there's implied the need to apply different strengths, or in some cases having to step down if a person has been using a very high potency steroid. There's advice for healthcare professionals to provide to patients and carers, but it's also talking about how often we should tell people to use it and make sure that they use the correct strengths of the steroid for the area of the body concerned. We also advise people to seek medical advice before using steroids on a new body area. And we are also encouraged, as we will have been told several times, to report suspected side effects on the yellow card scheme, as you might have done once or twice before. Our final piece takes a whimsical look at what we discussed earlier, which is the very serious concerns around the potential pharmacist prescribing loophole. And it draws us into an imaginary world of a pharmacist living in a town called Pillsbury. And as you might expect, his name is actually Mr. Pillsworth. It looks at the implications of such a loophole in this Pillsbury town and pits Mr. Pillsworth against the local doctor, Dr. Needles. We're pleased to say that the outcome of the interaction is very positive and is an outcome that we would hope is replicated in real life. But that concludes our update for this week. Check out the website and read our articles and let us know what you think.